Blog Talk Radio.
Good afternoon, everyone, and welcome to Blogger News on the Radio. My name is Simon Barrett, and I will be your host today. This is another in our ongoing series, Surviving the 21st Century, a look at health and nutrition in our modern world. Joining me to unravel the mysteries are my good friends, the writing and research team of Manny Barling and Ashley Brooks. Good day to both of you.
Hello, survivors all over the nation. We seem to have lost Ashley here. What's the matter with your phone, honey? Here, take mine.
Hello.
Like all good husbands, I've given up my phone.
There you go. It's tough being married. You know, what can
is.
I tell you?
It's very tough, isn't it? It's calling, instead of surviving the 21st, you have to say surviving 20 years of marriage.
that's right. You recently had a wedding anniversary. Congratulations on that.
Thank you. We survived.
I got another hash mark on my uniform.
So how are you today, Simon?
I'm doing fine. How has your week been?
Exciting and busy. We got the galleys for our new book, It's Not Your Fault. We're finishing them up, and it's going to be out in about 2 or 3 weeks. So I know everybody's dying to give this to somebody for Christmas, so stay tuned. We'll let you know when it's out.
It's really a fun book. That's all I can say, Simon. You're going to love this one.
if the corn syrup associations are bristling now, their ears are going to be burning the minute it's out.
Oh, dear.
And it's guaranteed to make people lose weight.
Oh, dear. So you're probably not going to be getting a Christmas card from Audrey... Oh, I've forgotten the lady's name. Yeah. The president.
Just call her crap.
Okay, yeah,
that's
yeah.
They call it, right? Court association.
Actually, I do have a funny little story to tell you. Yesterday, I was interviewing the president of Inside Out Development, a gentleman by the name of Alan Fine. His company specializes in executive coaching. You know, he works with the likes of IBM and HP and, you know, all these large companies. And he travels a great deal. So I asked the question, you know, as a road warrior, you know, what memorable horror stories do you have? And his response just made me burst out laughing. Every trip is a horror story of epic proportions. It's called the airline industry.
Oh, it is. It definitely has become that way.
And, you know, and with people who are sick or have had any genetic predisposition towards anything, like for Manny or for myself, which we cover in the Manny's Diet and an enzyme formula book, we cover how to travel and cover the food, because the airlines have some of the worst unhealthy food. I know that was not a correct sentence, but it's really unhealthy food that they're using on the airlines.
In fact,
I used to travel a lot, and there were some things I was served that genuinely, I had no clue what they are, what they were.
We call them mystery meals.
Right.
In fact, when I was working in a hospital many years ago, they served this patient who was so sick, the worst looking meal I'd ever seen. And I don't know, something took over me. I don't know what it was, but I shoved it into a test tube and I sent it down the lab for identification. And I wrote it up as foreign body. I wanted to know what it was.
So,
I never got anything back. I don't know who was insulted, but it was like, I'm not feeding that to her, you know.
You know, and it's funny, Simon, because we have a doctor and Chris Dantini on the phone are going to join us, and that's going to be one of my first questions to them about hospitals. And in fact, what we should probably introduce Dr. Dantini, who's a noted author who's written a wonderful book, The New Fibromyalgia Remedy, which we recommend to everybody. It's a brilliant book that includes discussions on food allergies and intolerance. And I'm going to start this off with, in a conversation, Dr. Dantini told me how he discovered that high fructose corn syrup was using dextrose 4 as an IV in the hospital. And I'm sure our viewers know what an IV is. That's when they stick that ugly-looking sewing needle into your arm and say, oh, it's okay, it's just feeding you nutrients and keeping you hydrated. Well, they're hydrating you on the same corn syrup that's in a Coca-Cola. And if you have a 2,000 cc bags a day, you're basically getting about 6 or 8 ounces of sugar a day, and the larger bags are dramatically more. And then, you know, I joked, I walked in the hospital one day, and my friend is recovering from a heart attack, and he had this corn syrup IV in his arm, and he's serving food at his
a GMO steak one day after having open-heart surgery.
And unidentified objects that contain MSG and 8,000 other chemicals. And he was looking, going, can you tell me what this is? So he's sitting there with his meal, and I'm thinking, here's a guy who just had a heart attack. They're pumping him up with the same contents as direct Coca-Cola, which, of course, the doctors wouldn't let him drink, and all these various different chemicals at the same time, and including some Jell-O on the plate, which is which is basically junk and red dye and genetically modified other garbage. And I'm looking at him and going, how can this person recover when they're just pumping the same dangerous chemicals in them the minute they get out of surgery? And Dan and Chris, you might say hello to our audience, and Dan and Chris, you might explain to us your experiences with this high fructose corn syrup in the hospital.
Yeah, I'd be glad to. Hello, everybody.
Hi, Dr. Dantini. Hi, Chris. Hi.
So we ran into this accidentally. I did, because I was I am allergic to corn syrup. But anyway, it was apparent to me that the corn syrup and the IV solutions is called dextrose, and when you get dextrose intravenously, you don't have any digestion of the chemically altered product, and so it's very allergenic. And so anyway, I'm in. And do a lot of children with fluid in their ears from allergies, and they're allergic to usually common foods, the most common of which being corn and corn syrup, because that's in all the sweet stuff. And so anyway, these little kids would have these wild arrhythmias, which is irregular heart rates, when they were going to sleep and waking up from the anesthesia. And some of them almost died. So I said, you know, it's got to be something that we're doing to these kids, because otherwise they're normal. And it sort of struck me, well, maybe it's the IV solution. So I just had a rule that no kid would ever, would ever get dextrose IV solution. They would get normal saline or Ringer's lactate, which does not have any sugar in it. And anyway, the kids all did well. I mean, we never had another incident of that, unless we had an anesthesiologist who didn't understand that concept and would march off on his own, disregarding my warnings. And almost always, two or three of his people would have major, major problems. And I'd have to put my foot down and say, look, if you're going to give anesthesia for me, you're going to have to do it this way. Well, later on in my life, I was out skiing in Colorado and came back with a fractured tibial plateau. And
Is that like a broken leg?
Yes, like a broken leg.
Okay.
It was a serious broken leg, okay.
Serious broken leg. Well, anyway, the anesthesiologist was a friend of mine, so he understood the corn syrup thing, and he put me to sleep. There was no corn syrup. Woke up, I was fine, no pain, but they gave me a intravenous morphine pump just in case,
and that had it, right.
Next day, well, Chris will tell you.
Well, I came in to visit, and he's singing away.
We have our own story on that one with Manny. Go ahead, Chris.
Well, it turns out that it wasn't just the morphine pump, but it was the antibiotics that they were giving him.
Mm-hmm.
They were mixing that in D5W. So every time he'd have the antibiotic dose, he would get just loopy. It was really
strange. I was seeing three TVs and four hands.
Oh,
and so I thought it was just the morphine, right? And yet I hadn't used one one of those little shots of morphine.
Of the pump,
that
morning,
and that was it. So the girls from the office came in, and they were saying, "Boy, he's really crazy." And I said, "Do me a favor and look and see if there's any dextrose in any of those IVs." And sure enough, the IVs didn't have dextrose in them, but the small bag of antibiotic was mixed in dextrose. And that was it. But
that little bit was enough to set him off.
And it was, it took me 3 weeks to recover from that. I didn't have my senses, my mind about me for 3 weeks.
Which is pretty incredible when you think about. Well, first of all, the FDA there's been no human testing of GMO corn or GMO anything. And so there's no human testing. We're the test. In addition to the fact, there's no FDA testing with an antibiotic mixed with this GMO corn, which is even more mind-boggling to me, how they can put this out on the market and not even test it to, and make it legal. And I had no idea until our first conversation about 6 weeks ago, Dr. Nantini, that that they were using high fructose corn syrup in the IVs. And I really think this should be something that's trumpeted across the country, because I'm sure this experience, it could save a lot of lives, because a lot of people could be harmed by this, which is really a horrible thing to me.
Can I ask a really dumb question?
Mm-hmm.
Because that's what I'm good at.
But we love Simon.
Simon, I think
Dan
is finally
coming.
I mean, why is there high fructose corn syrup in an IV? I mean, what's its purpose?
That if it's a long procedure or if somebody has diabetes, you have to keep up their blood sugar levels.
Right, so titrate it in, and
right, and that is an acceptable fluid replacement concept, but nobody really seems to care what the contents are, what the sugar is.
Do you have any idea when they started doing the switch on this thing to high fructose corn syrup without anybody's knowledge?
I started having problems with it back in the 80s.
Wow, that's incredible.
Oh, it's been a problem all along.
It's the chemical extraction of sugar from corn is not a kind thing for the human body.
It's not very good for the corn either.
Listen what they write up. You're going to love this write up. It's derived entirely from corn, making it natural, effective, and easily utilized by the body. Its fine texture makes dextrose versatile for a wide range of applications.
Well,
and they push this on athletes as well.
Yeah, I've got to add to that. Their ads say the perfect power boost for athletes and recommends they take it before, during, and after exercising. So Ashley still had a energy drink for a powder from Bally's on the shelf she hasn't used in a couple of years, and pulled it down, and sure enough, it's primarily high fructose corn syrup. So, Simon, I couldn't.
Gatorade is.
Pardon? I'm sorry.
No, we're talking about Bally's, you know, the exercise chain. Gatorade.
You can buy this at any grocery store. It's called Gatorade.
No, Gatorade, believe it or not, within the last year, much like ConAgra's Hunt's Ketchup Sara Lee products, have all abandoned high fructose corn syrup. And as Simon likes to joke, it's such a big deal to Hunt's. They have a huge label on their ketchup now that says no high fructose corn syrup. So,
but they maintain their MSG, but they eliminate the high fructose corn syrup. We're not saying it's a better product. We're saying it's trying to improve.
So I can't resist this comment right now. I decided that I put my food police trench coat on and I put my hat on. And I started searching the Internet. Of course, it got a little warm, but that's another story. And I searched high fructose corn syrup for dextrose IVs, and I found multiple Chinese and other companies selling it by the pound. You can buy it from 2-pound to 200-pound bags. And I swear it reads like a cocaine ad, you know, like get your pound of powdered high fructose corn syrup. And I don't know, it looked like they were selling the people who manufacture the IVs, and the same companies also sell a wide range of different bags of high fructose corn syrup IV solution, dextrose 4. And it's just absolutely amazing to me how this is now being sold in powder form all over the country. So you can just buy a bag of it and just scoop it into your orange juice.
Yeah.
I'm wondering, can you snort it?
I don't know, Simon.
You know, Simon.
We'll leave that one for you.
You know, Simon, I just went 2 minutes debating on whether I was going to say that.
It's all your Simon. What do you think, Dr. Dantini? Did that rate on his stupid question?
Snort a lot of things. Now, that's not one of them. But
so, speaking of the food, please.
Wait. I want to finish on the fact that one of the other things that it became very aware of since our conversation with the dextrose in the IVs, I'm thinking, oh my God, it cannot also be in kids syrup. So I'm now looking at the kids medicines. They're Benadryl for allergies, and cough syrups, and their NyQuils, and all these medicines that are supposed to be helping children, helping adults, helping people, all has high fructose corn syrup in it, GMO.
That's right.
We listen.
And nobody is aware of it. The physician isn't aware of it. I happen to be aware of it because I think early on I made some kids allergic to not only dyes, but corn syrup. You can't find one of those things for children that doesn't have a dye in it. You can't find any that doesn't have high fructose corn syrup. You can get them made specially by some of the compounding pharmacies, but they're extremely expensive. But that's what I do now if I have to order one of those things.
But that was incredible in Europe because they had pharmacies all over where the pharmacist would make up the drug specific for that individual's needs, which was, and, you know, drug as in, you know, antihistamine, whatever it was that that person needed, and it was all free of chemicals.
Well, we used to do that here, you know. That was the pharmacist's job.
Right.
I remember when my dad was practicing, he had an office above a drugstore, and he had his own little potions for various things, and the person would come in when I'd take his office hours and say, I want that stuff your dad gives for acid stomach, or I want that stuff you give for gas and cramps. And I'd go down, and the guy would compound this stuff, and I can't remember all the things that were in it, but it was like 5 or 6 different things. You can't get that today.
Oh, no. Well, that was, you know, the part of the change in 1952. Congress passed a law that stopped pharmacists from making these homemade remedies and ended 2,000 years of them and turned everything into prescriptions. So the only way you could get these type of things was from a drug manufacturer. And that is exactly when the drug companies took control of this country. And what they did is, in many respects, made doctors gods, because the only way to get these things was with a prescription, but the only way the doctor could service the patient by was sending him now to a drugstore to buy it from the drug companies. So in essence, it was a power move to eliminate independent people and independent pharmacists under the guise that they weren't doing it right. So in our book, by the way, our new book coming out, It's Not Your Fault, we have several charts of them. And chart 3 lists all sorts of packaged goods with high fructose corn syrup. And we list even the names that MSG is hidden under. And some of people should be aware is even children's Dime Tab decongestant drops where infants contains high fructose corn syrup.
Especially with flu season coming on. I'm horrified by this stuff.
And their plus cough infant drops also have high fructose corn syrup. All Robitussins have high fructose corn syrup. I list every single brand. How about a Robitussin Honey Cough Natural Cough Drops Honey Center, which is cough syrup, but it's primarily high fructose corn syrup. All of Vicks NyQuil contains high fructose corn syrup. All Vicks Formula 44, which are two of the biggest selling brands. In fact, Robitussin and Vicks are the biggest selling brands in not only the country but in the world. And pediatric Vicks, cough and congestion, as well as cough and cold, also have high fructose corn syrup. So people are sitting there with infants anywhere from 4 months to, I don't know what you draw the line as an infant. With me, when they start walking, they're not an infant anymore at about 8 or 9 months. Those children, 4 to 9 months, are being given high fructose corn syrup, and if they're breaking them in on Gerber's or some other form of baby food, they're getting high fructose corn syrup and MSG. And they wonder why these kids have allergies and they get autistic and become youthful diabetics, et cetera, or adolescent or even infant diabetics. And that has to be one of the principal causes. Don't you agree, Doc?
I do. I was amazed because I do look at that now, and there isn't one commercially available that I know of that doesn't have corn syrup in it. There are several smaller companies that made alternatives, but they've been run out of business.
What's distressing to me is how the GMO high fructose corn syrup has been known to cause the fatty liver, which is first stage or second stage. What would you consider that stage-wise in liver failure? Because that is definitely a sign that your liver isn't functioning because this high fructose corn syrup is so toxic. So then you combine that with maybe you could tell people what happens, like what happened with you with your allergy. It's like an inflammation, correct?
Yeah, well, high fructose corn syrup, for me, my reaction to it is a blood pressure one. It drives my blood pressure way up, makes me retain fluid, so it obviously affects my kidneys. It is so like death and taxes. It's like every time I accidentally get some of that stuff, I pay for it for a week or two.
So a person who takes this in and gets high blood pressure, which, Manny, maybe you could go into what's going to happen on Thanksgiving if they don't watch it. If they take this food in, which we're about to talk about for Thanksgiving, their blood pressure could go up, their pulse could increase, they could have arrhythmias, and with this, they won't know that it's actually an allergy. So instead, the doctors will start giving them drugs.
And bloating, gas, et cetera.
I'm sorry. Go ahead.
I have numerous patients. I actually have a patient, husband of one of the girls who works in the office. And when he does this, he gets such a wild arrhythmia that he usually ends up in the hospital. They usually do a million-dollar workup on him, and he comes out the other end of that, and they say, well, we really don't know what's wrong with you. You'll be fine.
I worked emergency room. I heard that countless times, and how stupid I was back then, because I had that experience with Dr. Randolph to never connect the two. I mean, it is all connected. It's all connected. You and I talk about that.
Well, that trend. Now we're segueing into our food.
Not yet. I've got one more stupid question.
I can't wait.
Okay.
Right now I can hear Jan in the background going, oh, here he goes again.
No, it's actually not a stupid question.
Can we judge on that? Can we take a vote?
Oh, sure.
Okay.
All right. I've always been led to understand that, you know, the federal agencies will not, allow harmful products on the market. Where is the FDA in all of this?
Okay, the short answer is the FDA should be disbanded and reconstructed in a new light. There is no protection from the FDA. I think today or yesterday I saw in the news that they withdrew Darvon because it was causing death. Now, Darvon has been a pain-killing medicine for, I think, 30 years?
Yes.
No longer than that. And it was it replaced Darvocet at one time, which was...
Right.
It's the same as Darvocet. Well, Darvocet's patent expired, and what happens is, which is what happened with Nexium, as you know, they changed one or two little differences in the formula, and they repatented Darvocet into Darvon. And they also wanted to abandon the problem that Circe was Darvocet was sort of the OxyContin of its time. If you remember, that was quite the popular drug in the 60s for people who did too much drugs. And it's funny, I told Ashley a story. There used to be a manufacturing plant in the Orange County, Cerritos area of Los Angeles that manufactured Darvocet, Percocet, Percobarb, and all those wonderful ones. And they had problems because they hired primarily female employees, and they would smuggle them out in their, you know, in their sleeves, everything else, and they were having a drug addiction problem. So guess what they did? They moved all these controlled substances, the manufacture of them, to Puerto Rico. So
right.
they're just south of the city of San Juan, if you know the area, just past the airport. And guess what? Puerto Rico now has one of the bigger drug problems in the world, and has had since they moved all of those plants. So anyone who's spent any time there has noticed, number one, every building in downtown has bars on it like a jail because of the violence and crime, but that crime has been primarily fueled by the drug trade, and it's not marijuana and cocaine. It's a pill trade. So here we are, you know, 40-some years later from when I went to college. Actually, I don't want to admit, about 48 years later. And and here we are dealing with, Darvocet and all these other drugs that I thought were pretty well eliminated when middle-class women, most of them Stepford wives, had become addicted to it, along with Tylenol and Seconal from the 50s and 60s. And I know you grew up in that generation too, Doc, so you probably saw more than you share of those people in your father's office.
Those drugs were like Valium and Xanax, and they were so commonly prescribed that it was a shame.
But
the other ones,
isn't their physical reaction more like OxyContin and Vicodin?
No, these are mostly sedatives and. Not really related. Darvon is a synthetic narcotic, but those were barbiturates and they were strong, and people used them for sleep, and then of course they used them for other things.
Yeah, Tylenol and Seconal also, right? Yeah.
But no. In the 60s drug culture, you would take the uppers, which was dexedrine-related compounds, and then you take the downers. That was the Seconal, Nembutal. Those were the barbiturate downers, and so that was the lifestyle. You got high, and then on speed, and then you had to get some sleep. So then you took the barbiturates to bring you down.
Yeah, but I was thinking also in terms of Percobarb and Darvocet and all the rest of those were narcotics as Darvon is, and they were much in the same family as OxyContin and all.
No,
the
he's
rest
saying
of,
no.
No, no.
They, oh, they weren't that. Darvon was never that strong.
No, it was never that strong.
Really? Okay.
It was definitely a common prescription that went out to everybody. Oh, you stubbed your toe. Here, take a Darvocet. Pardon?
OxyContin is raw morphine.
Yes, I agree.
I mean, it's between morphine and heroin.
Yeah. Yeah, I've had several people offer it to me when I was under extreme pain from after surgery and the rest of them, and I declined. I'd already helped a number of clients detox, and I just had no interest whatsoever in getting near it.
And, you know, what's confusing to me about the fact that that's permitted on the market is the fact that heroin, you take one shot and a person is supposedly addicted for life, yet you can take OxyContin and give it out as a prescription. So it's that one has been very confusing to me.
Well, if you look at the number of people addicted to OxyContin, which we put in our book, you may have noticed the whole problem they had in Canada with it, where they had literally thousands of people addicted to it, much more than I've seen even cocaine addiction.
Yeah, we have a problem here in Florida where we supply, in South Florida, we supply the whole East Coast with all of those drugs in fictitious pain medicine clinics, which seem to move around, by the week. And they as soon as they raid one and close it down, they go to the next one. It's a big problem for not South Florida so much as almost all of the other states north of Florida.
I have to ask you this question. You know, to prescribe something like Xanax, you have to be a doctor. I mean, how do these pain clinics operate?
Well, let me offer you that. Let me answer that for him, Dan, because that one I'm really familiar with. Usually what they do is they bring an anesthesiologist on board, and most of those clinics advertise to people with serious back problems. That's how Rush Limbaugh got involved in it. Right now, a friend of mine was going to a back specialist who treated pain, and I finally said to him, ask the guy a special, and he comes back to me and says, this is an anesthesiologist. So what I'm finding is anesthesiologists who don't want to be in the hospital anymore do this, and they specialize in treating patients like that. And when they can't work anymore, they send them to these anesthesists. What do they call them? I can't pronounce the name well. It's not anesthesist. It's a different one. It's a psychiatrist who specializes in back pain. But what he's really doing is measuring whether these people are addicted to OxyContin and other things like that, and prescribing more drugs as only a psychiatrist can do, or changing their drugs. So, and of course, if they're addicted, then they treat them for the addiction that they've all caused. So what's happened is a lot of these pain clinics, Simon, here, are caused by doctors who are on the fringe who don't want to be in mainstream medicine anymore and see an opportunity to get rich quick prescribing pain-killing drugs to people who have really serious pain problems without regard to whether or not they're even becoming addicted, because if they become addicted, then, of course, they have to make more trips to the doctor. So a doctor who's bordering on ethical decisions or has become too money-motivated and greedy uses this opportunity, much like lap band surgeries and other things, to expand his income sources. Do you disagree with that, Dan?
No, I actually agree with it. It's even more sinister than that, because when they try to get off of these things, they can't, and so they put them on methadone. And so we have methadone clinics, which are legal, and the methadone is more addicting than the narcotics they just came off of.
Right.
And you know what the saddest thing to me is the fact that our bodies are incredible. And you talked last week about homeostasis and putting it in balance. Pain is a good thing. It's your body saying, something is wrong. Let's go check it out. If you start with where you are, Dr. Dantini, which is brilliant, and this is where it should start, is let's look at the blood and look at the fact that you can check and test to see where the inflammation is starting to cause the pain. Then you stop that, eliminate that, and your body goes back to normal. It's like so basic that to go to drugs first is to treat the symptom, which the people are doing, as opposed to finding out what's causing the symptom, what's underlying that symptom, is just, it's so, I get angry about it. Can you tell?
I have that same anger, and that's what's kind of, that's why I'm sitting here this afternoon talking to you, because it is a mission of mine, and I think we do have it as a profession, we have it wrong.
We do, and as our oath, the oath that we take when we become, like for me, when I became a nurse and you became a doctor, that was a privilege to become that, and it's an oath that we took, committing ourselves to help people. And so this other way is so wrong. I'm sorry.
Do no harm.
Pardon?
It's the oath states, above all, do no harm.
Right, exactly.
And that issue has been lost. It's been lost on the FDA. It's been lost in the practice of medicine. We practice medicine now expediently. So it's what I call Band-Aid medicine. We practice Band-Aid medicine because it's easy, it's fast, and it fixes the symptom for now, but it does not give any attention to the cause, as you said. And therefore, there's never a cure. So somebody who has chronic back pain, who could benefit by any number of modalities of treatment, is given narcotics, because that controls the pain for a while.
I'd like to give you a lawyer's point of view, but first, a quick story. Well, the same friend was having a back problem. One of the different modalities, of course, is a variety of exercise programs, and there's some very good clinics that have machines, as you know, that stretch backs that help people from having the tightened muscles, which is what contributes so much to that and the inflammation. But his insurance company would only cover 8 visits a year. But boy, it would cover all the Vicodin and Oxycontin and other stuff his doctor would prescribe, which to me is nonsensical. But as a lawyer, I was sitting in my doctor's office after complaining to him about Vioxx and Celebrex, which he put me on to try because I was having so much pain. I said to him, these don't solve any of my problems with Crohn's disease, IBD, or IBS, or any of the health problems I'm having. He says, well, Manny, they weren't intended to. He says, they're basically painkillers and things designed to mask the pain so you can live with it. And I said, well, is there any drug for this? No. And we're talking about 10 years ago when Crohn's or asthma were still in the dark ages. In my opinion, they still are. But I said to him, you mean the solution to all these various things is to give you some kind of pain killer and put a Band-Aid on mask? And he says, oh, yeah. He says, how do you think they're making money? This is how drug companies make money, is rather than cure something, they give you something to deal with the pain so they can keep selling it to you. And I said to him jokingly, you know, they're no different than the street drug dealers and the rest of them. He says, no. He says, the only difference is they're licensed. And that's been my view for a long time, is the difference between someone trying to sell you a form of heroin, Demerol, or other type of things like that, illegally, and the company who allows these doctors to prescribe it legally is strictly being licensed by the FDA. So I jokingly describe some of our major manufacturers as licensed drug dealers in the same sense. And then you take a look at someone like Pablo Escobar, the huge cocaine dealer who was eventually killed, and some of these other ones, and they go look at Merck and Pfizer and the rest of them, the organized gangs that operate much like they do, and advertise on the street instead of newspaper and sell newspapers and sell drugs much the way they do. Oh, the doctor give you free samples, and after you like it, then you can buy it, which is no different than a drug dealer giving a teenager a cocaine or marijuana and saying, if you like it, you can buy from me. And in the end, all we have is legal versus illegal drug dealing, which won't get me into the discussion of marijuana for people who need it, who are ill, because to a great extent, it's the same issue there. And the same issue with alcohol during Prohibition. All we did with Prohibition in the 20s was create a whole generation of gangsters and drug dealers who then became legitimate businessmen. But they functioned no differently at the time than Cutty Sark and all the rest of them. In fact, the Kennedys became multimillionaires smuggling scotch from Ireland during those years. So, and they're not the only ones. Seagrams, the Bronfman family were very active in it. So we created a culture, and again, we're creating another culture. And to me, there's no real difference. And as a doctor, you may view it differently, but as lawyers sit down, we view this as another economic way to make money illegally.
And the saddest part to me, or the sickest part, I should say, is getting back to your food and allergies and where it actually starts. Here, there's five major corporations that create the GMO products, and these five corporations all have a part or stock or part of the drug companies. So one hand is in the other hand. We're making you sick, here, take a drug. I mean, it's really sick. It's like the more I get into this, the more upsetting it's all been, very upsetting to me.
And
just think Soylent Green.
Yeah. You know, I'd like to quote Dr. David Suzuki, a well-known geneticist in Canada, who says, if the drug companies don't know it, claim they don't know it, they're either stupid or liars. And we know they're not stupid. They know all. So
the whole concept is, I often tell people when they say, well, you know, the FDA says that this is okay, so it must be fine. When I started research back in the 60s, 80% of all research money was funded by NIH for basic research.
And that's the National Institute of Health, for listeners.
Right. And now it's 10%, and 80% of all research is done by drug.
And let's go back to the beginning. Your question was, what was the FDA doing about corn and all these allergic reactions, high fructose corn syrup? Simon, you may not know this, but the FDA has taken corn off the list. You can't even suggest that it's an allergen, even though it makes even the Mayo Clinic, who's sponsored by drug companies primarily, who's not the Mayo Clinic of the two founding brothers, they would be ashamed of what Mayo Clinic does now. They basically say corn is not an allergen. Don't even bother discussing it with it, despite countless scientists and people complaining to the FDA about corn allergies. And so here you got a group who's decided to protect this, who are basically industry-friendly. And I recall Dan Quayle making a speech in 1991 when all this biotech started and Monsanto was starting this big run with genetically modified foods, standing before Congress going, this is wonderful. We want to push the biotech industry, and we're solidly behind them. And frankly, the government and the FDA, the USDA, have been solidly behind industry. And they just need to say that the FDA is an industry-sponsored group like all their other bought and paid for industry-sponsored groups, and stop trying to fool the general public.
Oh, here's a perfect quote that fits in there. This is a perfect quote. Okay, maybe not. You can correct me if it's not. If people let the government decide what foods they eat and what medicine they take, their bodies will soon be in as sorry a state as are the souls of those who live under tyranny. Thomas Jefferson.
There you go.
Ouch. I mean, you've been waiting all week to share that.
I have been. How did you know, Simon? All week.
It's the last time I'll send her a Jefferson quote.
I love that quote. I sent that to you. What are you talking about?
Okay. I want to change the subject at least temporarily. Thanksgiving is just around the corner. You know,
mm-hmm.
Let the feasting begin.
Well, you know, Simon, as I said, the food police were out yesterday. We were wandering around the local market. And I know, Simon, you're not into anything, but I love the iPhone because I can walk up and down the aisle of the market, Ashley will hold a product, and I'll snap a picture of the label. Of course, we look a little weird to people who look at it strangely when we think.
And I always do this. I'll go, honey, let's see if you can. I'll go home and research and see if you can eat this when I see managers go by looking at it.
I do have to ask the question. Is it true that you put on a hat, dark glasses, and trench coat?
You know, absolutely.
And I'm in a wig, and I do my trench coat, too, and
you know,
big glasses.
You know, I don't know if you know this, but our cat is named Bogey, which is short for Humphrey Bogcat, and his sister is Catherine Hepcat, called Katie. So I put on my Bogey outfit, and we head to the market, and we slink around. It's impossible to go up and down an aisle and find anything without high fructose syrup. So for all the men out there, I have to tell this story. We get to the market, we park, we walk in, and I wanted to see only four or five specific things, but we didn't get 20 feet, and as she goes, whoops, stop here, and she finds this pulled pork meal, which was so outrageously out of control, I had to do that one. So about 19 different products later, which thank God for the iPhone, if I had to buy film for it, I'd be in trouble. I'd shut all these products. So we put together what Ashley thought would be a quick meal for people that work hard.
I wanted
hard
to do an easy
frozen
party meal.
Yeah, this is a party one. And, of course, she insisted on appetizers. So I'm going to run through a couple of the best-known products for Thanksgiving and then ask Dr. Dan to tell us about what I believe people go through, which is a 1 to 3 day Thanksgiving food hangover. Afterwards.
Knowing that that corn syrup lasted 3 weeks in your system, I can't wait to hear what you say about this one, Dr. Dan.
So Ashley picked up this appetizer called Party on the Go Appetizer. So it's an appropriate name. And
Thanksgiving for me used to be a blur. We would usually have Thanksgiving dinner about 1 o'clock, and I would be absent until about 7 or 8.
I'm experienced.
Yeah, I just pass out.
He was sick for about 3 weeks.
Yeah. So here's the Party on the Go appetizer. It's an appropriate name. It's a little package containing cocktail, smoky, spinach artichoke dip, and meatballs. So.
Easy. Just open it, pop it open, throw some carrots in it, GMO carrots, ready to go.
I don't know about carrots. I don't throw GMO carrots in the cocktail smokies. But, hey, they're for vegetarian women, fine. But seriously, I stopped at 160 ingredients. I just got sick of counting. More than 100 of them contained MSG. I stopped counting at 100. And there were more than 20 different forms of corn syrup solids, high fructose, corn syrup, dextrose, you name them. And at the end, I looked at the package and went, oh, my God, 2,000 milligrams of salt and more than 80 grams of sugar in 2 links, 3 meatballs, and 4 tablespoons of dip. The average guy with a beer in his hand is going to kill those meatballs and links in a minute. So I said, I'm going to try first probably the healthiest of one, which was Trader Joe's turkey breast and cranberry apple stuffing. That had 78 ingredients, more than 45 containing MSG, and had 7 different sugars. But it was probably the best of all of them. It was only 450 milligrams of salt, but that would be plus the MSG, another it's probably 800 or 900, and probably about 25 grams of sugar and 320 grams of cholesterol for a 4-ounce serving of turkey breast. I can't even imagine, and cranberry stuffing, which means at least half was turkey and half was apple stuffing. So most people would eat a couple of those on Thanksgiving. So, really, you could be getting as much as 1,800 milligrams out of the healthiest one. But I must tell you that we have a running joke. Simon and I joke about Chef Boyardee, which are really a hunting tool, which we'll get to another time, and Hungry Man. So, Simon encouraged me to find the Hungry Man roasted carved white meat turkey. Okay, that only had approximately 160 ingredients, more than 80 forms of MSG, and more than 8 forms of sugar.
It's a tiny tray.
Well, it is. This is the 1 pound.
I know, but it's
serving.
Still small. I mean, it's still 1 pound. Okay, it's small.
But that included everything. Total weight was 1 pound, which means we're trying to hide how much meat they're really giving you. But that had 1,600 milligrams of salt without including the MSG and the others. So it could be almost double. It had 22 grams of sugar, more than 100 grams if you include all the various different forms, and it had 45 grams of cholesterol per package. It's a one-serving package. So even Stauffer's, another nationally known brand, turkey breast had 70 ingredients, more than 30 containing MSG, and again, 8 different sugars. And this was a smaller package, and it had 1,320 milligrams of salt, not including the MSG and other things. So that could have had 25 milligrams. I mean, you hardly threw your appetizers into dinner, and you're way past your recommended daily allowance, and it had 25 grams of sugar and 25 grams of cholesterol, and the sugar was probably double. So, you know, Ash and I joked. Ash said, well, look at this. You used to like Entremans, which purchased a company called Vandy Camps, and anyone who's lived in Southern California know the Vandy Camp family, or here more than 100 years and owned the famous Lowry's restaurants that were nationally known. One of them, who I knew well, became the Attorney General, the DA of L.A., and very well-known family.
Looks like a healthy dessert. We're going to eat dessert.
Yeah, well-known history, right? This little raspberry Danish twist had 80 ingredients, 40 containing MSG, and more than 11 containing different forms of sugar for a little 1.5 to 2 ounce serving. Had 190 milligrams of salt, and if you throw in the MSG and the rest, it's more like 400, in a little 1 ounce bite of a raspberry Danish twist. I mean, I've been baking since I was 9 years old and worked in commercial kitchens. Nobody puts salt into a raspberry Danish twist, okay? It was just ridiculous. So I said, okay, let's get an alternative.
Wait, you skipped the sugar part. That's the best part.
Come on.
Yeah. 1.5 ounce serving
had more than 50 grams of sugar in it, okay?
Wow.
1.5 serving, okay? So Ashley said, oh, look, everybody likes Toll House. Well, we couldn't find a Toll House, chocolate chip cookie.
But they're all got the same ingredients, so.
Well, I don't know. I think the chocolate's probably worse. So we picked a benign one, a Nestle's Toll House gingerbread cookie dough for Thanksgiving. A common thing, little gingerbread cookies. What could be wrong with that? Well, it's got approximately 44 ingredients, 20 or more ingredients contain MSG, and 4 different forms of sugar. And this is in a little cookie, 90 milligrams of salt, and plus the MSG, so it's probably closer to 200, 9 grams of sugar, and since there's 4 different forms of sugar, it's probably 20 or more grams, and 10 milligrams of cholesterol per cookie. So, and
I want to know, is it a butterball turkey?
People say, I don't use butter, I use margarine. And Simon and I have had this conversation. I've been against margarine all my life. My mother refused to put it out. She said, margarine will kill you. And sure enough, later people started agreeing with her. But the most popular brand generally is I Can't Believe It's Butter. I Can't Believe It's Not Butter is actually the title of it. And so anyway, make a long story short, you know, since most people use that, I said, okay, they're going to have a piece of bread, but I won't even get in the bread. Let's just talk about the butter people put on.
Because we've covered bread.
Yeah, the butter they put on the mashed potatoes, the bread. So we went with I Can't Believe It's Butter. So we're talking about 2 tablespoons now. So understand, if you measure 2 tablespoons for your mashed potatoes, you're the only one in the world. But assuming that you stuck to that, you would get 90 milligrams of salt, but it says no sugar. It's got 26 ingredients. Most of them are genetically modified plant oils, rapeseed, canola oil, palm oil, soy oil, and all sorts of things. And it's 14 different forms of MSG and all sorts of artificial flavoring. So there's no nutrition in there. There's no real food in this. It's all chemicals and MSG. It says it has no sugar, but it had 2 different forms of dextrose and high fructose corn syrup. So it really does have sugar. So when you look at it, it's a huge amount of money salt and sugar for something that's supposed to be 2 tablespoons. So I added it up. So the average person is working toward a family who can't do the expensive big turkeys, et cetera.
Yeah, because these are $2.50 for the hungry man per person, which is...
So you figure that, an Entenmann's, and an appetizer, and et cetera, for dinner, frozen dinner for 2 is around $20, which you can't do with a real turkey. So I thought I'd add it up, and this is what 2 people, and even a family of 3, if they went the Hungry Man cranberry stuffing and Entenmann's dessert, without even getting the cookies, would have. First of all, salt-wise, it's more than 7,000 milligrams of salt a person. Sugar-wise, it's approximately 280 grams of sugar, which I included 2 Cokes or 2 Pepsis, because no one can get through that without drinking some of that. And that's equivalent of 10 ounces of sugar. Assuming I'm wrong, I'm off by 10% here or there, that's still 9 ounces of sugar, or it's 11 ounces of sugar. It is a tremendous amount of intake of that in a short period of time. So when you add up, I didn't even add up all of the ingredients. The ingredients together are maybe 1,000 different ingredients, even though you and I know they're all basically chemicals cooked up in a meth lab, a lab run by a drug company to make MSG and all the rest of it, and some type of a corn derivative, and the meat.
It's got lots of soy in it.
And the meat, by the way, of course, is coming from factory farm cows, and we all know that
turkeys.
Cows and turkeys,
right.
And because there are meat products in here, Ashley,
mm-hmm. Yeah,
and
sure.
The meatballs and others are. So even when you look at the turkey, it's that turkey roll, and anyone who knows anything about turkey roll knows that they take the leftover pieces, compress it with soy, and usually guar gum, which is a binder-like glue, which is equivalent to food glue, into a roll, compress it, and then slice it.
And guar gum comes from India, which has all the pesticides.
And I remember when the song about Vegemite came out in early 83 and how everybody talked about Australians and this horrible mixture of vegetables into a loaf like a salami that's Vegemite. Well, that's what the turkey is in all of these dinners. It's some kind of crunched up, leftover, off-the-floor type of meat crunched into a salami-type roll that's about 4 inches thick and then sliced and put into your turkey dinner. So we're not even getting into the fact that almost everything there is some type of manipulated chemical, factory-farmed meat, or it is high-fructose corn syrup from corn. So that's why you would pass out for 7 hours. I would have a Crohn's disease attack for 3 weeks until we went totally over.
And we never ate like this. I mean, we were looking at Simon Asked for Hungry Man, but we were looking at the stuffing box that we normally did stuffing as well as the Franco gravy, and oh my gosh almighty, I look at the labels are just horrifying. I can't believe I ever served anybody this food.
And
not what we just went through, but the stuffing and the box stuff.
So Ashley, say for me, it's Franco American Slow Roast Turkey Gravy, which comes from Campbell's. It has about 15 or 20 different ingredients, including modified corn starch and all sorts of other things. Cooked turkey meat, what does that mean? Oh, I'd hate to know. And they put wheat flour in it, and you go through all these things that they put in, including caramel color, and you've got all sorts of MSG products in here. And this particular product got 320 milligrams of salt for what they, and a serving is 1 ounce. Jeez, 1 ounce of gravy. You ever trying to limit a 12-year-old kid on Thanksgiving to 1 ounce of gravy, let alone yourself? And Mrs. Covenson's, which is one of the most popular ones people use at home, has just huge amounts. It's got 410 milligrams of salt per a 4-ounce serving, which when you mix with all the other ingredients would make less than a 4-ounce once it's liquefied. It would be an even smaller amount, but you would also have to throw in all the, you know, can't believe it's not butter and all the different things.
Oh, this thing's so packed full of MSG and corn.
If you make homemade stuffing from cans off the shelf and packages like Mrs. Covenson's, you're talking about, you know, somewhere about 1,100 grams of milligrams of sodium salt in each serving. And, God, the cholesterol they claim is, there's no cholesterol in it, but when people put everything else in it, it certainly is. So, you know, whether you make it yourself or you from packages or you buy the packages that are pre-made, you're essentially getting the same components, corn, factory farm food, and synthetic.
GMO,
yeah.
Pesticides,
and
bacteria, viruses.
So, Doc, do you think this could kill somebody?
Well, it almost killed me every time I ate that stuff. I still want to know what it's in a butterball turkey, because the butterball turkey is my downfall.
Okay. Well, actually, Ashley and I have gone to organic turkeys and make butterballs taste like junk.
Oh, my gosh.
So
Costco has them. If you have a Costco around, they're great organic turkeys.
So, wait a minute. I have to ask you this question that Ashley said to me earlier. After looking at this thing on the screen, Ashley said to me, my God, how many heart attacks, strokes, hospital visits, and digestive illnesses show up in the hospital and afterwards? And I wonder if there's any stats on the number of people who get sick after Thanksgiving. And we said, we've got to ask you that question. So tell us, what's a hospital like from Thanksgiving on for the next few days?
Well, there are very few people who show up at the emergency room on Thanksgiving. It's always after. I don't think they can. You know, it's one of those things where if you're really sick, you can't get out of bed, or if you're really like me, I would pass out. Literally, I would. It's like somebody hit me with a hammer in the back of the head. I'd be passed out. I could never watch a football game. I could never carry on a conversation about half an hour after dinner. I was just out. And as I said, didn't wake up until 6-7 hours later. And I was, you know, AWOL, missing. But, you know, when I used to work in the emergency room, which I used to do regularly when I was in my residency, Thanksgiving Day was empty. The day after that and the day after that and the day after that was just full. And all of the problems that you are discussing, people would present with, lots of GI problems, lots of migraines, lots of, you know, the things that are related to foods. And, you know, I don't know how many heart attacks because, you know, it's hard to remember all that stuff. But
it is, isn't it?
A significant number, you know, had cardiac problems. So it's one of those things where if you're an emergency room physician, you get a real fix on that after a while. But the curious thing was the emergency room was empty the day off.
So oh, the
Thanksgiving, we didn't really work at all.
I think
it would be wonderful to get some real data from a hospital, any hospital, but I have no idea how we could achieve it.
Oh, I do. Well, you know, most people don't know this, but their utilization charts provided to doctors in the hospital that actually rank them according to their hospital utilization, which is an extremely political thing. In the old days...
What does that mean?
Well, let me get to it. In the old days, it meant perks. So I have a friend who's a high producer who sometimes has a bed census, which is the number of patients in the hospital, exceeding 25% of the population. It's in the same hospital that the famous, world-famous Curlin Job Clinic did athletic surgeries for 40 years before they opened their own facility, and they usually had anywhere from 20 to 35%. So these two medical groups basically provided half of the bed census for these two major hospitals. So you can imagine the office space they were giving. And in the days when it wasn't illegal, a lot of it was free. I actually negotiated some deals where clients got a year's free rent if they would just refer their patients to a hospital. And I'm sure you remember those days, Dan. So even today, when the lesser perks, you know, it's almost like when I went to Catholic school, they published the grades at the end of the semester, and you knew whether you were first or last in your class, which they used to intimidate you and, of course, to motivate you to do more. So, and Dan, you remember the days when the low producers were taken to lunch and issued ultimatums about getting more patients and filling beds, and the high users were taken to the country club and fed champagne. Remember those days?
No, actually, nobody ever did that for me.
I guess I didn't
matriculate in the right society.
You're matriculating in the perfect society.
And I can tell you, every hospital administrator in any major hospital, for example, we had 7 medical clinics and acute care hospital that I participated, sat on the board. I was in-house and outside counsel at various times. We could tell you the utilization of all $72 in doctors in terms of patients, Medicare billing, Medi-Cal billing, private billing. It was broken down to every category. We could tell the number of patients, number of hospital visits. Some of it was kept.
I do know that. That's been around for years.
Yeah, and some of it's PSRO, which is, you know, reviewing doctor's conduct, because you want to know whether a doctor is visiting his patients in the hospital, and you want to know if he's seeing them twice a day or just once a day, which is important, as you know, for specialties like internists. If you've got an internist who's only seeing his patient in the morning, you worry about it because he really needs to see him in the evenings, too, because of, you know, the dangers for those type of health problems. So, but anyway, And along with that are all the other statistics of how many people come in with gastric illnesses, heart attacks, et cetera. So that information is available. I'll see if I can get some of it.
What would be more interesting to me is if somebody would have taken all the time they were doing to decide how many heads were going to count in a bed to, you know, having a kind of charting that actually would have been, you know, water, you know, everything that that person ate and drank during that time period. If they actually could bring in that charting, people could actually start relating to, oh, this food is making you sick, instead of putting all it into, let's count heads. I mean, okay, so I'm a little sarcastic.
Well, but, you know, Doc, I know, and this is another one that I don't know if you've experienced too. With the hospital pharmacy, I helped develop a program to track OxyContin, Vicodin, and other things, because we wanted to know how much was being prescribed and which doctors were prescribing and whether some were doing far too much or whatever. And, of course, my reasons were for liability, but it also gave us a better indication of where the dollars were going in the pharmacy. So I don't know if the hospitals you've been involved with have that kind of statistical data, but starting in the mid-90s, we developed that.
Oh yeah, they have all of that information, and now it's even to the point where they tell you what to prescribe. The new healthcare system is going paperless, and that means that if you don't fit the algorithm that's in the hospital computer, you don't get treated.
Right.
That's so sad. Well, you know, that pretty much happened to me, though, with Germany. All of our expenses for me to have the medication that I needed, which were, you know, homeopathics, nothing would be covered.
Yeah.
Nothing would be covered. So we were on our own. And there was nothing they could do for me in this country, but there is everything they could do in Germany, yet my insurance company covered nothing.
Well, you know, Doc, I'll sum it up with this story. I developed a tumor in my left eye, benign one, behind my left eye. My eye was bulging out. It was unsightly. And, of course, it was starting to affect my vision. So I had to have it removed. And would you know that Blue Cross said it wasn't necessary?
Oh, I believe that.
And I had to fight with them to get them to pay for eye surgery because they didn't think it was something I needed. I said, so what do you want me to do, wait for the tumor to be the size of a grapefruit? And the party I was talking to at the time said to me, well, under our guidelines, we wouldn't pay for that either. And so after I gave a senior supervisor a rather large suppository, it got paid.
No, you know, each individual that has health care insurance and pays a hefty premium for that has to
do
that kind of situation every time they have a fee that should be covered is not. And to my way of thinking that, you know, they really don't have insurance. You know, they say there's 40,000 or 40 million people who don't have health care insurance. You know what? I think they're probably the smartest ones.
Yeah. If I would have taken our total insurance premiums since my surgery and Ashley's health problems, we would have a huge pool to pay for any medical bills right now. We would have been far better off in
absolutely
the long run. Not even a close second. But, you know, there are bigger issues with some of this, too, is that one of the objections everybody has to Obama health care is a commercial one. I have Medicare now, which is both good news and bad news, and the truth is it pays far better, covers far more, and ultimately, if enough people got on Medicare or some type of government system, the drug companies would have to negotiate lower fees for their drugs. And right now, drug companies rip off Americans on Medicare with their drug costs. And I'll tell one simple story about it. I take the only drug I take right now is a blood pressure drug.
It's secondary to Vioxx, which was never tested.
Yeah. So anyway, to make a long story short, it's called Eucardia when you buy it abroad, and I forgot the name anymore, the local version of it. And it's really designed because one of the things that happened after the Vioxx problem was I have an erratic, I don't have blood pressure problems, but I have an erratic pulse problem. sometimes that it triggers. So anyway, to make a long story short, which I also think is connected to any accidental MSG, you know, arrhythmia is basically the problem. So I was annoyed with it here. They wanted, even on Medicare, it's like $50 or $60 a month to get a prescription coverage of Medicare, but of course these named drugs weren't covered, so therefore I'd have to pay $75 for a prescription once a month because, as you know, the prescriptions are only good for 30 days. Why? Because the pharmacy gets a billing fee every 30 days when it's renewed. So they get, besides selling you the drug at a lower cost, they get a $10 fee. So that's why they make doctors renew. So I started buying it in Canada, which time I could buy up to $600 without a renewal. They cost me, I believe, a prescription of 30 is somewhere around $8 in Canada for the name drug, not even a generic. And when it came in, the first thing Ash and I noticed was it was probably, what, one-fourth or one-fifth the size of the American drug. And the American drug was full of inert ingredients, excipients, you know, all those different things the drug companies pull in. Like, how about a glue or what we call a binder? Because after all, they've got to put their corporate logo on, and if they stamp the corporate logo and the pill breaks, what good is that? So they have to put a plasticizer, a plastic, over the pill so it seals, so when they put the logo on, it doesn't break. And in recent years, drug companies are concerned that you will split tablets in half and reduce their sales. So by making these hard with plasticizers and this pseudo glue, you can't break them in half. I mean, I have trouble breaking pills in half. So at the end of the day, they increase their sales. So the minute I start taking this Canadian form of my drug, I had no more side effects. None. Zero.
Yeah. And it's pure white, so there's no dye in it.
Yeah, I have patients who get drugs from Canada, and they are much cleaner drugs.
And what's amazing to me is it's made by the same company.
Oh yeah.
You know, except it removes all the crap, and they should do the same thing here. Yeah.
Well, no, what happens is the drug companies are in partnership with other people abroad. So the Canadian company is in partnership with a Canadian company. So the reason they wanted to stop the pass laws a few years ago during the Bush administration to stop the Canadian drugs from coming in is because they didn't want to compete with themselves.
Right.
So instead of saying, I don't want to compete with ourselves, please protect us, they said, oh, the Canadian drugs aren't effective. They're not, you know, until someone exposed the fact that they're the makers of the Canadian drug, too. So,
well, you know, most of the drug companies now are not the U.S. There are very few U.S. drug companies left.
Yeah, and you know, it's funny.
You know, most of them are in Switzerland and France,
Germany,
and some Germany. You know, the big ones are not here. Pfizer's the only big one left here. Pfizer and Merck are the last of the Mohegans.
Right. You know,
I thought there was a large industry in India.
Oh, yeah.
Well, India does most of the generics.
But they provide less to our country than they do in the areas that surround there. And the Indian and Chinese drugs that come in the United States are brought in bulk and then packaged and labeled here, which is, I consider, patently illegal, but they get away with it, and they get to put made in the U.S. on it, when in fact they're not.
And there's a difference in the formula, as we discussed previously in a previous show. It's a completely different formula.
Oh, yeah. Do you know that as dangerous as Vioxx and Celebrex are, the Indians have created a generic version on their own and are selling it? Oh,
sure.
My God.
The other thing about generics is, even here in the United States, the FDA does not have the same oversight for generics as they do for patent drugs. And so, you know, when they make a drug, to give you an example, 15 milligrams is very hard to even see. And so when you have a 15-milligram pill, and you can pick it up, most of it's excipients,
right,
and binders and that sort of thing. But when they make it, you have to mix it in a big vat. And what the drug companies have to prove is that every portion of that vat that's being mixed has the same concentration of active drug. That's not the case with generics.
Yeah, I know. So one never knows whether they're getting the drug or a placebo.
That's correct.
Yeah. The other one, too, as I pointed out before, is having represented a variety of different companies, I know as a matter of policy they hold back on the final registration of their patent, some ingredient or some change that ensures them some control over their drug. So when people go to make a generic, they aren't making the same as the named drug, which is how they try to protect themselves. But invariably, I go back to the Nexium previously Prevacet, I forget the brand it was, and when their patent would change, it just changed formula a little, but I'm not sure if they didn't go back to the original formula and then repatent it.
Actually, it's Prilosec was the original, and that was changed to Nexium, and the only difference is the way the drug is sterically related. In other words, sterically means how it's related in space. So there's the R version and the L version.
Well, and by the way, you know what the
I'm
other...
Sorry, let me
go ahead.
Go ahead, Dr. Dantini. What else?
So that's the only difference between Nexium and Prilosec. And,
well, there's one difference, Doc, you're missing. One has that pretty purple dye and plastic on it so they could stamp the pill.
That's right.
Let's talk about dyes. We keep going back to dyes. One of the things that... when we were doing research, we found a lot of dyes in Europe are banned in Europe, and that we talked about in one of our conferences, you and I, about how dyes were banned in the United States. Yet I see these in all the foods, yellow dyes, red dyes, all these dyes that are I thought were banned. What's the story on that?
The story is that the FDA has allowed them to use their present supply from the time that they were banned, and at that time it was about 40 years for each dye.
Now, these are carcinogenic, correct?
Right.
So these carcinogenic dyes that we see...
And remember, you just earlier were talking about all of the children's medicines, and none of them are made without dyes. They're all carcinogenic.
If the kids are sick, we'll make them sicker.
Correct.
Well, you know, I used to like orange soda, which I don't drink anymore, because the dyed orange soda is done with that yellow dye, which is a carcinogen. So anybody who's out there drinking these orange soda diet drinks and other drinks...
Oh, that's a great Thanksgiving drink.
...consuming a huge amount of yellow dye, which is dangerous to you. And as you know, one of the first instructions if you have a colonoscopy is not to drink these things because they dye the inside of your colon and interfere with a colonoscopy. So if you're someone who's sitting home eating, and I include Gatorade and all these
Doritos,
so many things
dye.
No, I'm talking about liquids
okay. Now.
You Gatorade, that orange-colored Gatorade, and all the other orange drinks and that are made by Coke and Pepsi and all the rest, you're dyeing your colon orange.
I have to leap in with another of my silly questions. What is a carcinogen?
It's a substance which can be shown to cause cancer in humans and animals. They usually test it on animals first because obviously there's less liability. But of course, we know that they don't just use animals.
They use the poor across the world. It conducts a lot of these tests in Nigeria and other countries where people die and nobody notices.
Yeah. When was the last time a couple of lab rats sued?
You mean the ones that are fat, pumped up on MSG? Which is interesting, Doc, because I actually pulled out of our book a couple statistics. You know, our books are so heavily laden with information, we even forget them sometimes, which probably has more to do with my age than anything else. But, you know, one of the things she noted was, you know, the National Kidney Foundation reports about 26 million adults have chronic kidney disease, Well, these dyes and all these things we're discussing are a big contribution. High fructose corn syrup, MSG, et cetera, a big contribution. 26 million adults. Isn't that a huge number? And I want to add to that, Ashley pulled something else out of the book I'd forgotten. Since 1948, the amount of excitotoxins, which are MSG, maltodextrin, all those things you see on the label of your fruits are excitotoxins, of which there's more than 70 different ones. By 1972, they'd been doubling every decade, they were up to 262,000 metric tons, which is 52 billion pounds of excitotoxins, including MSG, maltodextrin, and all the rest in the food. And, you know, in terms of aspartame, there were more than 800 million pounds of aspartame consumed in various products. I have not been able to find statistics for the late 1990s or 2000s because now there's no way they're letting those out. I have been able to find out tariffs on the import amounts, and we're importing 50 billion pounds of MSG and other related excitotoxins right now, which are, again, all those ingredients you see in those food labels, without any knowledge of what's being manufactured in the United States. So when you look at these numbers and put them in that perspective that people are eating at least 66 pounds of high fructose corn syrup a year, an equal amount of sugar, that's 10 pounds a month.
Your poor body.
What I am constantly amazed about is that we have survived so so many of these things for as long as we live. You know, if we were a society, and there are some societies still, you know, around that do not eat any of this stuff, we could literally, with our technology, live probably to 150 years old.
And healthy.
And healthy. And a lot of these societies, people live over 100 and are perfectly healthy. They have no arthritis, no kidney disease, no liver disease, no heart disease, and they don't have the benefit of hospitals or doctors.
But you have to stop by saying, we are not extending our lives. The truth is, we're not surviving. But you started saying, in spite of that, we're surviving. The truth is, the life expectancy in the next decade is going to drop dramatically, and the children born in the last 20 years will not live as long as their grandparents. And that is probably the first time you can say that in our history.
Yeah, that was your point, though, right?
Pardon me?
That was your point, correct?
That's my point. My point is that, you know, if we don't take this into our own hands and do something, each of us individually, we are going to mortgage or limit our life expectancy and reasonable health. Every time I see somebody in the office who's, you know, above the age of 65, they complain about the golden years, and I always tell them that the golden years are 10 unless you spent your younger years living well.
Yeah. Well, you can still change, and you can still, in my case, at pushing 67 years old, I look 10 years younger than I have, and maybe since I became ill, and I feel younger than I have in 15 years. So if you get off all these chemicals, your body may not be able to
coupled with the enzymes.
Heal,
taking the enzymes converted his body, and you could actually see healing in his skin. You could see the healing and change in his face. The enzymes completely changed what had happened to him over the assault of all these chemicals.
And, Doc, it's just not my opinion. I run into people, you know, I live in where I grew up. I went to high school 4 miles from where I live, and I run into people I grew up with all the time. And some of them I see maybe every 3 or 4 years. And I saw somebody the other day look at me and said, "My God, you look like a different person." And I said, "Yeah, it's enzymes and living a chemically free life, and it's really that simple." And while
I have to agree with you because I'm 68. And I feel better than I felt at 48. And, you know, I can tell you that it does work. and the body will heal. If you give it a chance, it will.
So tell me, after reading our books, weren't you startled to find all the foods you thought were safe for you were not safe for you?
No, actually, well, I wasn't startled. I was startled by the actual amounts and volume of information that I didn't know. But I wasn't startled about the concept because I've had that concept for years.
I know. We've been on the same page. Do you know that the same time you were sick and had become initially sick in your 30s, this hit me after we hung up last week, I was in intensive care off and on for close to 2 years in the hospital in my 20s.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, our timing on, and you and I never met until 6 weeks ago.
Yeah, well, I think her point was you were both seeing Dr. Randolph at about the same time.
Coming up with same concepts, and I wish I would have met you sooner.
Well, no, I wasn't talking about theories, because I know theoretically you've been at this point for a long time. But what seems to bother or shock all our friends, and Simon's gone through this, is when you start looking at the labels and you see how all-pervasive and the sheer volume and total of all this is really, and that was what was shocking to Ashley and I as we wrote the book. We knew a lot of this, but the sheer volume and depth of the amount of chemicals and the fact, as you point out, that everything you eat has these components, it was really quite alarming as we went along.
That was a shock to me because I had looked at labels for years because I cook, so I'm the one that's reading all the labels. But what surprised me was what was in the stuff that I thought was okay, like, you know, the vitamins that they add. I didn't realize what they did to make the vitamins. So I was kind of discounting all that stuff and saying, well, that's okay, you know, and saying, well, that's something we can eat.
Yeah, though that surprised me too. I've always stayed away from synthetic vitamins, and now I really understand why. And it's funny, every time we read a survey where they say, oh, vitamin this or vitamin that doesn't really work, then we find out when we read the studies they use synthetic versions of the vitamins, and they stack the results by using synthetics. And in fact, there was a product, was it Lithicin or something else, that was the problem a number of years ago where they took a synthetic form and they tested it to prove
L-tryptophan
L-tryptophan didn't work, but never even tried a natural source.
So they yanked that off the market, as you know, Dr. Dantanian, and they never, ever checked it for the actual organic source.
Mm-hmm.
So the
I know. I remember that.
Yeah, the test was run from synthetics.
So to me, the latest industry propaganda is, oh, don't buy organic foods because they lie and they're not really organic.
Oh, I hear that everywhere. Oh, my gosh, I hear that so much that it's stunning to me.
Yeah, like, okay, we won't trust them, but we'll trust, you know, someone to sell us genetically modified tomatoes that are broken up with the E. coli virus. Oh, yes.
I had a 13-year-old this week proceed to tell me, his mother said, my son's a scientist, and I asked him about genetically modified because I just wanted to hear what the 13-year-old had to say. He said, well, you know, it's healthier for you because it's made in a lab. And he was dead serious. And I started giving him the stats. You know me, I can't keep my mouth shut. So I'm giving him the stats to try to guide him. He said, you know, we're all going to get cancer anyway in our lifetime, so what difference does it make what I eat? And he was dead serious.
Well,
they've done their job. Now, he's a scientist. Pardon? I'm sorry.
I think the big industry's done their job.
They have. A 13-year-old.
Yeah.
He looked at me like, oh, you're just this person.
No,
who...
when he ended it, well, no, the best ending, Ashley, tell me your comment. Talk about the cancer issue.
Oh, I told you. I just said that.
Oh, did
yeah.
Everybody's going to die?
Everybody's going to die of cancer sometime in their lifetime anyway, so... And yeah, the industry is doing their magic across the board, and people are buying into it because Monsanto alone is spending $2 million a day on advertising. $2 million a day to convince people that it's better to have biotech than it is to have organic.
Well,
bananas.
Bananas
coming up from Costa Rica are now GMO.
8 different varieties of GMO.
And their program is, we are no longer going to have bananas if they don't sterilize our seeds. I swear to God, that's what the ad is.
Oh,
Okay. I hate to break up this party, but we're going to be losing our live feed very shortly. So I do need to wrap this program up. Manny and Ashley, give me your parting thoughts for the week.
Our parting thoughts for the week are go organic at Thanksgiving and wake up the day after. Enjoy a football game and good health. If you get up the next morning and you think you have a hangover from cheap wine, you've had a hangover from the ingredients and the food. And the easiest thing in life to do is to change your recognition. Sometimes you look out and you don't recognize a car go by where you're not recognizing food ingredients as they go by. Stop and educate yourself, read the labels, and guard your health, because I guarantee you, corporate America has no interest in seeing you healthy.
Yeah, my watchword would be that if you want to be healthy, you have to take charge of your own situation. You cannot allow other people to or companies to influence what you inherently know to be right. And I think that's the important thing. You have to take charge right now.
You know, I really enjoy doing this weekly program. And
what did you do, Simon?
I didn't do anything.
were brilliant.
No, I mean, I've had this conversation with my wife. You know, it's easy. All I do is, run it, hit the green button that says go, and I just let the rest of these folks have at it.
Simon, you're terrific, and I really appreciate it. I wish we didn't live so far away that all of you could come here for an organic Thanksgiving, because I wish you all great health. I wish the listeners great health and God's blessing.
And Chris, are you still with us?
Yes, I am.
Do you have any parting thoughts?
No, but we're cooking organic. My son-in-law cooks for us, and their family is totally organic, so we're having our own organic Thanksgiving. So.
Oh, so you don't even want to come over? That was sad.
Simon, sadly, you're on your own right now.
We're here.
So we didn't say anything about the books. Dr. Dantini's fibromyalgia book, it's called The New Fibromyalgia Remedy. It's an excellent book. I would definitely tell everybody to definitely read it. It's by Dr. Dantini. And
you want me to do
yes.
it? Our books are arthritis, inflammation, gout, Crohn's, IBD, and IBS, as well as Manny's Diet and Enzyme Formula. And our new book is It's Not Your Fault. It's about weight gain, obesity, and food addiction. So you can buy them at Amazon, anywhere else, and even in our local neighborhood, you can run over to Juicy Ladies and sit at the bar and have a nice little organic meal and take our book off the shelf, buy one and read it, sitting there. And at the same time, they offer fabulous discounted vitamins and other foods and things that you will absolutely love. So.
And Chris, what is your internet site? For ours, it's www.howtoeliminatepain.com. And Chris, what is yours? You also have a cooking one that has vitamins.
Yes, our alternativechef.com. And to be tested for your own food allergies, it would be foodallergytest.com.
Terrific.
And Manny, is there any truth in the rumor that your fourth book, you've decided to retitle It Is Your Fault, Simon
Barrett? Well, we left that for Oprah. See, Oprah thinks that the problem with everybody's weight gain and obesity, along with some of her guests, are in your mind and that you can solve it with religion. So.
And eat lots of soy, which is like the worst. Well, let's get into soy the next week. Let's promise each other to
you
soy.
Know, I want you to know, Simon, I tried praying over a frozen dinner and it didn't help.
Well, I'm going to head to the freezer and see if I have any Hungry Man dinner.
Simon, now you can't eat Thanksgiving dinner in in peace.
And, you know, the other line out of our new book is if God intended you to be free of all this, he would appear to you at McDonald's and say, don't eat the food. And I haven't heard of anyone getting a message from God at McDonald's yet.
Okay. I really do need to wrap this up.
All right,
up.
I want to hear what Dr. Dantini says first. What were you saying?
He said happy Thanksgiving.
Yeah.
Oh, happy Thanksgiving.
And happy Thanksgiving to all of our listeners, and particularly to you, Simon.
And be safe.
I do hope that all of you, not only have a happy Thanksgiving, but we'll come back next week and we can continue this conversation.
And you might even get your chicken tetrazzini recipe you're looking for.
Oh, one of these weeks, we are going to fit that in.
Thank you, Simon.
Thank you. Thank you, Dr. Dantini and Chris.
You're welcome.
Have a blessed week.
You too.
Until next time. Goodbye.
Bye.